cannibal sandwiches, cockroaches that can survive in the snow, the science of buying holiday gifts, and antibacterial soap. Those maybe don't seem like they're related, but they're the topics of some recent studies we're looking at in the next few minutes with WBEZ producer Monica Ng and our weekly look at science. Hi, Monica.
Hey, Nyla. How are you?
So I didn't know about cannibal sandwiches until I was reading about this CDC report about an E. coli outbreak in Wisconsin connected to these.
Yeah, you know, I thought I knew about all sorts of gross foods, but cannibal sandwiches were new to me. They're steak tartare is what they are. And they say that they're a delicacy of the upper Midwest. And the CDC was kind of funny as they described
it. The quote unquote upper Midwest. Right. What does that mean to the CDC?
Right. It's, I guess, people in Wisconsin.
Do they just mean Wisconsin?
They mean Wisconsin.
Okay.
Maybe like Minnesota.
Okay.
And I talked to a friend last night who was from Wisconsin. She said her father used to eat it all the time on rye bread or a cracker. It would be chopped up meat, beef, and a little onion on top. And they said it puts hair on your chest. But apparently it can
And
it
also can
too.
Give you E. coli as well, according right. to the CDC, right?
And so yeah, they're asking people to not eat it, to consider just how dangerous it might be. There was a recall of 2,500 pounds of ground beef last year after people got sick right at this time of year because it's a holiday favorite in these parts.
But just to be clear, when you say like steak tartare, that is not ground beef.
Well, right. So I guess what it depends on is if you go to the store and just buy some ground beef in a package, that could have beef from all sorts of different animals. And it's ground industrial with stuff that could be contaminated.
You mean different parts of the animal is
right.
what you mean. Right, okay.
And if you do steak tartare, traditionally it will be a restaurant or you taking home a whole muscle piece of meat and cutting it yourself, which really decreases the likelihood of contamination. So they're saying, you know, don't eat raw meat at all, but certainly don't just go get some ground beef.
Don't eat raw ground beef should be our lesson from this.
Exactly. Although, you know, it's so funny because I'm shaking my finger, but I was just at Eataly for a press tasting 2 weeks ago, and Mario Batali handed me ground chopped up beef that was raw on a crostini with white truffles.
And did you him that he could be giving you E. coli?
No, I said, thank you very much, sir. Yum, yum. And I stuffed it in my
okay.
mouth.
Well, the next study looks at another scary discovery. And this one is about roaches that wouldn't mind a Wisconsin winter, right?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. They found a new breed of roaches that hadn't been found stateside before, and some Rutgers University entomologists have identified it as let's see, what's
it's
the name of it?
It's an Asian roach species. Is it Periplaneta japonica?
Japonica, I think so.
I don't know how you pronounce
and
that.
And so this was you know, known in Asia, but it hadn't been seen here. And when they
now
tested,
it's in New York.
It's in New York, and who knows if it can come to Chicago. And what they noted was it could survive in snow. So we usually thought, you know, at least some snow, like a good old-fashioned Midwestern winter would kill it.
That's what I always think in the winter. I'm like, the only satisfaction I take from extreme cold is it killing all of, I just think, oh, it's at least it's killing all of these horrible insects.
Right, like those fruit flies that hang around my kitchen, at least, you know. Finally, they're gone. But apparently, this guy would stick around. And some people are worried, oh, no, it's going to mate with native cockroaches and they're going to have like a super roach. But maybe you didn't know this, but it probably couldn't do that because the genitalia of roaches have to really match each other in order for them to interbreed. One of the researchers, Dominic Evangelista, says the male and female genitalia fit together like a lock and key that differ by species. So we assume that these will not be able to interbreed with each other.
Do they check?
I suppose that they could do that, okay. But they seem to be different by species.
So how do they die? I mean, other than squishing them.
Well, I guess you'd have to actually get an exterminator in, but you just can't hope that
the
cold weather
is going to kill them out. Okay,
them
let's hope they do not make their way to Chicago. They're probably already here.
Right.
Okay, so this time of year, I think especially everyone's worried about catching colds and everyone. We have the antibacterial everywhere, all over our newsroom, and it's all across the station. But this new ruling today by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration says no more effective than soap and water.
That's right. This is actually an issue I've been looking at for a while. Apparently, they've been testing this triclosan, and not only does it possibly build up in the environment, not only could it be breeding superbugs, and not only could it be a hormone disruptor, but they're finding it's no more effective than soap and water at getting rid of the germs that we want to get rid of during the cold and flu season. And people have been pushing the FDA for years to reconsider the use of triclosan. Now, keep in mind, when you see those hand pumps, that's not always going to be soap or gel with triclosan. It has to say it on there.
So what is it? What do you have to look for? What should it say?
Look for at least 90% alcohol. Okay. A lot of hospitals, fearing that they're breeding antibiotic-resistant infection, have gone to just pure alcohol for that very reason.
Oh, okay. Okay, which is great this time of year because your hands are dry and then it's basically just like pouring alcohol over your sad, dry hands.
But it's interesting because when I was doing this story, I thought, well, certainly I don't have any of this junk in my house. I found that at least three of my hand soaps had them, plus my toothpaste had it. And so they're considering its use in toothpaste, too, because they do say that it can be effective against gingivitis. But are these side effects worth it? They're not sure.
Right, of course. And, of course, we talked last week about the whole antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Okay, so finally, let's have something more fun than antibacterial and roaches and E. coli. If you have a bunch of people on your Christmas list this year, I thought this study was interesting because it's sort of how we kind of mess up gift buying for people.
Right. What they say is if you've got a ton of people on your list and you're trying to be like, oh, well, Johnny gets this very unique thing and Mary gets this, don't do that because you can mess it up for them and for yourself. And so we have Mary Steffel on the line.
Right. The University of Chicago marketing professor who
University
did this research. Oh, sorry. Yeah. University of Cincinnati. Professor Steffel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
So your research suggests that our efforts to find just the right gift for each person may end up being almost just more trouble than it's worth. Why is that?
Well, I think when givers are shopping for multiple people at once, it can lead them to pass out the gifts that they know would be liked the best by multiple recipients in favor of getting things that are different for each person.
And why would people, you know, go out of their way to try to search for a unique gift?
Well, I think they're trying to be thoughtful. I think as a giver, it feels somehow impersonal or like taking the easy way out to get the same thing for more than one person. But what givers are failing to think about is that from the recipient's perspective, if they're never going to know what anybody else got, they're not going to be comparing gifts with the other people for whom you're shopping, they're probably going to want the thing that was top on their holiday wish list.
Okay, so the key is if they don't know the other person that you're giving the gift to, then just get them the same thing.
Yeah, just get them what they want.
So if I have like three boyfriends, as long as they don't compare, I can get them the same heartfelt gift.
That would probably be your best strategy.
Okay. And now you say that when you're thinking of a good gift, you should think about what you would want yourself. Why does that work?
Well, actually, the advice that we give givers is to think about what the recipient would choose for themselves.
Oh, the recipient, right.
This gets you to stop thinking about things from your own perspective, but to actually think about things from the recipient's perspective. What are they going to enjoy the most? What are they going to get the most use out of? We found that shoppers who did this before making their gift selections were more likely to go ahead and get that same better-liked gift item for multiple people.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for sharing your research with us. Hopefully we help people make some better gift decisions.
Thank you.
That's Mary Steffel. She's a University of Cincinnati marketing professor. Thanks to Professor Steffel, as well as my colleague Monica Ng for bringing us some scientific and research of the week. Thanks, Monica.
Thank you, Nyla.